Mr. Doherty, room 3.
I carried on and got up and staggered over to the little hut I'd got there, where the grave was dug in the front, and went to sleep. The Japs didn't take any notice of me. They left me there. And then they came over with a third of banana and gave me that. I said something to him I didn't understand, but they gave me the banana. It puzzled me. I couldn't make it out. And then another Jap guard named Hoodwichi gave me a third of a cigarette, which was quite a luxury. But they didn't give me anything to eat after that. And they just left me there. Maybe two nights after, I don't know, I was very hungry. But suddenly there's a bash at the side of the hut, and an arm came through, just a big black arm, and dropped a coconut leaf. A tapioca root. Tapioca root on my lap, and I ate this up, which put me back onto my feet again. Then the Japs, when they saw me up on my feet, they allowed me to go back to work, and they gave me a rice ball. This was something extraordinary, because I've been feeding on beetles for a long time.
Was this because there was not enough food?
They didn't have food for themselves. So if I caught a snake, they'd take a snake away from me. But these big beetles are about 8 inches long, and they're profuse in the jungle. And if you caught them, I don't know where I'll keep going on these triple things, but I dug a trench up the side of the hill, and I covered it over with twigs, and I allowed the creepers to grow over it, because you wasn't allowed to light a fire on the island, you see. And I built a little fire at the bottom of it, put the beetles in, bake them, and eat them there and then. It was like crackling a pork. And the smoke would go up the hill, and it came out at the bottom of a big bush there, you see. And all the chaps would go screaming up the hill. Well, in that time, I could be back in camp again, getting on with my work. They never did discover what I'd done. Now I got over that. They didn't find out where the smoke came from. That was one way I lived, you see. But when they gave me this ball of rice, of course it was quite a luxury. And I got back to work again then on the digging of the tunnels. One day I came out of the tunnels, and a Yankee plane flew by. I had some, I don't know what I thought this Yankee plane was going to do, but I took off me out on Doshi and waved like flipping hell to it. And it turned, and it came right at me. And I dived behind this tree, and the side of the tree went out with one big burst. He'd opened up with his guns at me. I never did that no more. We had several attacks like that on the island, of course, the Yankee planes coming down. As one time, all the Japs were in their bunker, and a Japanese soldier, an officer, sat on the side of his bunk there and told me to stand in front of him while this raid was on. Doesn't sound much to you. Inside, I was scared bloody stiff. But I wouldn't give in, because this Jap was taken as though nothing was happening in the world. And there's shells coming round me all the time, and tops of coconuts coming up and all that sort of business. And he was just sitting there talking to me, asking me if I had a wife and children and all, what part of England I came from, and I just stood there answering his questions. And then, of course, when all the hullabaloo was over, you know, all the other Japs came out, and the officer and I were still standing there. So the officer gave me a cigarette, which was, as I say, it's a great luxury. A third of a cigarette was a great luxury. So there was another thing. Oh, there's something else I'm going to tell you. What was that about? Oh, yeah. I didn't tell you about the raid on Gokopol.
This was an air raid, was it?
Yeah, the Americans. Well, the first raid was night time, you see. And the Americans came over, and all the searchlights was up, and all the bashings was going on. And suddenly, in the sky, was this brilliant white zigzag. And all the searchlights turned onto it. And it got larger and larger as it came nearer the Earth. Terrific, great big zigzag. And all the guns opened up. They forgot about the flames. All the guns opened up on this thing. And hell was let loose. Well, we didn't know what it was. But next morning, we found out it was a toilet roll dropped from the aircraft. And as it was unwinding and the lights were shining on it, they thought it was some secret weapon that was coming down. And I think that if the Yanks knew about that, they'd laugh their bloody heads off, whoever dropped that toilet roll out of the plane. But anyway, that was one. That was, I thought I'd bring that over. But the raid on the Battle of Coca Pole was marvellously engineered. First of all, a load of bombers came over at a height. And the Japs went up to intercept them. But when they got there, there was a circle of double fuselage planes going round in a circle, and some leaving the circle and some entering the circle. So the Japs took up another effort where they would form the circle round the other way. That is, one was going round and round and one was coming up and over and down through the circle. And there was planes being shot down both sides. And this went on for some time. And the Japs then had to break off and come down to land. Now, all those twin arse, I can't say twin arse ones, that's wrong. The double fuselage blokes came down and they did not give us hell. And the ones up the top let go all their bombs and that, the big ones. And the place was being knocked to pieces. Coconut trees coming down. There's old Paddy Hearn dived underneath me and saying, "Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for our sinners now." And he's digging deeper and pushing me out of the ground. But there's comical things like that. You laugh when you look back at it. But that was the finish. There's no more Jap aircraft went up. They, I think there's a couple left and they went up and saluted, rolled over as they went up or something. I suppose a salute to their fallen ones. But that was the end of the aeroplanes, as we know it, Japanese aeroplanes. Now we go back to Watum again, shall we?
Yes, coming back to Watum, could I ask you again about this digging of the tunnel? I can't understand why it was that only you and the Japanese were taking turns digging the tunnel. Why didn't they get some of the other POWs to help?
Well, I don't know where the others were. They was on another part of the island. This island was about 3 miles in length. Well, when I was let out, like we'd been digging these tunnels, you see. Now, they're putting all stuff inside the tunnels, and they had all special arrangements. Because if the Americans had invaded, they'd got these canisters that they'd put on the front of them, you see. And they'd strap this round the back, and they'd have this bit here. What they're supposed to do, this detonator coming out the front. What they were supposed to do if an American tank came on the island, they got to put themselves underneath the tank. By pressing the button, they blew the tank up and themselves, you see. But this was an honour. One bloke committed Harry Carey over this. I had to go on the parade there.
How do you mean he committed Harry Carey over it? To avoid having to do it?
No. It was an honour, you see. He decided that he was a senior soldier to this other soldier that got the job of carrying this detonated bomb with the privilege of blowing himself up. But he didn't have the honour, so he thought, I don't know, but this is the only way I can interpret it, that he was being insulted. So he went up to Nishimoto and asked for permission to do this ceremony business. So it was all called on parade. I was placed on the end, and I had to face north as well.
Towards Japan?
I suppose that's what it was, yes. They all faced one way, and they said this prayer. And then this bloke in the front there laid out a sheet in front of him, bit of white cloth in front of him. And he knelt down, and when they come to a part of the prayer, where it finished up with oosh, he dug this knife into him and collapsed on top of it, with his back to us.
Did he scream?
No, he made one big shout when he said oosh. And that was it. You see, everybody said it together. And he dug this knife into him and collapsed onto this bit of cloth in front of him. The other Japs came forward and they grabbed him and they bunged him on a fire to burn him or something. And then the piece of cloth that was on the ground where he fell on, the blood had streaked out and they let it dry. Well, it looked like the Japanese flag. And they put his name alongside, in black letters along the side. They took a shovel full of ashes and put it in the box. Then they got his knife and his photos and they wrapped it all up and they put this in a square box about foot by 9 inches, something like that. And they put, I suppose it's his name they put on the side, because I can't read Japanese, but I presume it was his name, put it on and they took it away. But that was the end of the whole effort. We were given chicken after that, little bits of chicken in rice. Maize mesh, they called it.
Called what?
Maize mesh. That was after the ceremony, you see. We all had the same amount.
How did the POWs watching all this react?
The POWs weren't there. It was only me. I was on the end. I was the experiment. They used me for bayonet practice, you see.
Can you describe how? What happened?
Oh, yes. They stand you up against the tree and they get broomsticks and then they come dashing at you with these broomsticks. Well, you were supposed to parry them off when they come at you, otherwise you're going to get bruised ribs.
What did you have to parry them off?
My hands. Only my hands. Nothing else. They had broomsticks, or like a broomstick they were, but it's the best way I can describe it. And when they charged at you, if you swing your arm sideways like that, you can divert the blow. When the next one, you can divert the blow. If you miss and they get you, well, you're in pain and that, you see, because this has to go on for some time.
So it's just a case of putting your arm out in front of you and brushing them aside so they don't hit you in your middle.
So the pole hits the side of your arm and squirts away from you, see. But if you're unlucky, then you get it in the middle. I mean, a little case like I went up to the officer there and I said, oh, I'm sorry, I touched that then. Didn't make any difference.
It's all right.
I went up to the officer and I hadn't washed for a fortnight and I was filthy and all the rest of it. I went up to the Jap soldier and I said I wanted to wash. And he said, the Japanese soldiers have gone a fortnight, they haven't washed. I said, it's all right for the Japanese soldier not to wash, but it's not good enough for the British soldier not to wash. And he just called high and one bloke sprang up and I had to go round the back there. And this soldier, he belted into me with his pole. He belted me till I was on the ground. I couldn't do nothing about it. I felt sick with pain. That was another one. I was always getting in there.
How often would they use you for bayonet practice?
Well, it depends on their whim. You see, they may get more fun out of plucking a chicken and torturing that than they would me. But if they felt like having a go at me, or plucking a chicken. You want to feel sick, do you? They get a chicken and they pluck it alive. So it's just his head's left on over head with his feathers on, you see. And they tie a string round its leg and they hold the string. And they get some coconut fronds in the centre, you know, the leaves. And they make a little fire up and they keep running this chicken round and round the fire. And the poor little thing's terrified. They've hit it across the back in the first place, and by hitting it across the back, somehow they've stopped its vocal cord because the chicken couldn't make a noise. It's still running around in circles. And then when they finished, after all this paraphernalia, they put his head in the fire And then this chap chopped its head and put the chicken into his mouth and drunk all the blood out. Another one like that with animals. The Jap sergeant major had a dog, Akka. And he went away, and the sergeant major was jealous of this dog. So he got this dog and tied a piece of wire to a coconut tree and tied the end of the dog so the point of the wire dug in its neck. And then he stood back and kept throwing stones at this dog, so he's running round and round the tree all the time. By the time he'd finished, he took the wire off the dog and let it go, and he ran into the jungle. When the sergeant major came, when the officer came back, he called the dog, and the dog started coming to him on his belly, up to the officer. And when the officer saw this, he was disgusted with this dog, so he just took out his revolver and shot it. But a man was jealous of an officer because the officer liked the dog. I couldn't make it out. That's I just came over to what. But what was I talking about before these animal business?
Could I get this clear that he was jealous because the officer liked the dog more than he liked him?
That's right. Yes. Yes. Now, carry on.
You were talking earlier about you'd gone back to Watum.
Watum. Yes.
Watum, and you were talking about the Japanese plans for resisting the U.S. invasion.
Yes, yes.
And you said they'd had these cylinders strapped to their chests.
Yes.
How did you know that they were going to do this to resist the U.S. invasion? Did they speak to you very often
yes.
and tell you all about
yes.
it?
Yes, they spoke to me.
So could they speak English, or had you learned some Japanese?
They could speak some English, and I could speak some Japanese. And between us, we got by. I mean, they teach me all rude things in Japanese. Of course, when I come out and I speak Japanese now, people look at me in a gust if it's a Japanese soldier, a Japanese lady or something. I was told off, had Japanese models at the art club. I thought I'd be clever, so I was telling them to go on the stage, etc., but apparently I was swearing at them all the time. And the Japanese lady came down and told me never to speak to Japanese ladies with those words. So my words are really soldiers' Japanese. I think like some English soldiers would teach a Japanese soldier if he was here. So I have to be very careful.
So how long were you by yourself with this group of Japanese?
Well, I don't know. I imagine must have been a year, 18 months, I don't know. I had no way of recording time. Now looking back, it was a hell of a long time because I learned a lot of Japanese. So before I went in, I couldn't speak Japanese. My hair grew to a massive length. Yes, well, that gives you. How long does it take your hair to grow down to your waist?
An awful long time.
Well, that's how long I was with the Japanese, you see, in solitary. My hair had grown that long, and my beard had grown down to there.
What, down to your chest?
Just about here, yes. So when I came out, I had a beard down here, and my hair was down here. But when they took me back to the other prisoners, we'll come to later on, we'll find that you find their enjoyment or laughing at me. And they cut me off as a bob, shaved me and cut me off as a bob, which they thought was very funny. But that's beside the point. Let's keep on the point. Where were we?
And so all this time, you were with this Japanese group by yourself. You were working on these tunnels, were you?
And getting coconut oil, yeah. But I was given the run of the jungle, to be able to collect the coconuts, because I'd ran out the area we were in, so I'd used the coconuts there. So as I went on, so I got further into it, you see.
Into the jungle.
Into the jungle. And as I got further into the jungle, so I came more friendly with the Kanakas. And the Kanakas are the natives of the island.
Can you tell me about how you became friendly with them?
Well, Surely, just because of this, for my name is Doherty, and one of the Kanaka's name is Doherty. And the first way I came about this was to shout through the jungle, Doherty, you see? That came through the jungle. And gradually, they came to me, because my name was Doherty as well, because I asked one of them, why do they keep calling my name? Although the Kanaka only spoke broken English, he understood what I was saying. And he told me this other bloke who I met, the chief, was Doherty, you see. So as I got out, they cover for me so that I could have a talk with them, keeping eyes out for Japanese all the time, you see. Now, I mustn't go... And how to explain it? I didn't have the chance to sit down with them and talk. Do you follow? Because there's always a fear of the Japanese. If they got been caught speaking to me, they would have been killed, with no mistake.
Would you have been killed?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because they was using me as labour. They might have done. It wouldn't have taken... They wouldn't have given a second thought whether to kill me or not. Matter of fact, I don't know why any of us were alive, to tell you the truth. No, now we've gone through that lot.
But I'd like to ask you more about the Kanakas.
The Kanakas?
When you say you didn't have a chance to sit down and talk to them because of your fear of discovery, but... what type of attitude did they seem to have towards you personally? Did they help you, or were they suspicious, or what?
When I told you before, when I was starving and I'd been beaten up over the chicken, that Kanaka that put the tapioca roof on my chest, though he didn't know me from Adam, saved my life. And I wanted to know how the other prisoners were. So I conveyed to Paola, that is another Kanaka chief I knew, I conveyed to Paola that I wanted to know how they were, and I wanted to tell them I was all right. So without ado, he cut a bamboo, that's at the two joints, he split the bamboo in the centre to cut a groove out of it, so it's a disc with a slot in it. And the two pieces he had left over were two sticks. He put the bamboo in between his knees, and by going the bamboo in the centre, he got a deep sound. To the end, he got a high sound. And in less than 2 minutes, he had the report back that they were all doing well, but Lieutenant Mallet, the night before, they'd beaten Lieutenant Mallet to death on the other side of the island. Oh, sorry, because he was a bit of a friend of mine, because he was, I tell you who Lieutenant Mallet was. He sang in the old days with Ernie Locke, Oh for the Wings of a Dove, which was recorded. Yes, well, in that brief time, he got message from one side of the island to the other and told me how the other people were getting on. And I told him to tell them that I was well and alive, and that message went across.
So the Kanakas helped you a great deal?
They helped me a lot. Without the Kanakas, I wouldn't be here today.
You said that the Kanakas didn't really know even that much of a war was going on, but what did their attitude seem to be towards the Japanese, as far as you could tell?
Well, they was friendly. They were going to bear them, but they looked forward to the white man coming back. In other words, the Japanese was there, they'd got to be tolerated, they feared them, but they were still allowed to carry on with their menial tasks, as though the Japs had taken all their boats away from them. It didn't stop them from catching fish, because they, a route they got, they can sprinkle over the water and stun all the fish. dive in and pick them out and bring them in a pool, so they always had a good supply of fish for themselves. The Kanaka was a very suspicious person. He was a Christian as well in some ways, but there they'd reverted to paganism. They had the ceremony of the new moon and a lot of ceremonies. They offered me a wife, which I couldn't accept, of course, because they all have yours, and even if I was in a position to do so, I couldn't have taken a wife out there, for instance. But they have a coinage out there at that time, which they made up of cowrie shells, which they got from Submarine Island. Submarine Island. They are, at certain times of the year, the island comes above the ocean.
Temporarily.
Temporarily, yeah. Well, during that time, they've got these little tiny cowrie shells, and they spread the bamboo, they cut the bamboo into long slivers, and by putting the cowrie shells on these, the length of my third finger is one penny, to the palm of my hand is tuppence, threepence, sixpence, no, it's one shilling. One shilling is up to my shoulder, 3 shillings or one chicken.
Would that be the width of your arms.
That's by two arms stretched right out lengthwise would be one chicken.
And threepence is up to your elbow.
Threepence is up to there. Sixpence is there. Shilling, 3 shillings, you see.
So threepence is up to your wrist. Sixpence is up to your elbow.
Is it to the crease of my elbow. A shilling to my shoulder blade. And 3 shillings when my arms are fully outstretched. And one barrel load is one wife.
A barrel load?
A barrel load is one wife.
Barrow?
Barrow. You know, one of these pushing things. So, they've got quite an economic system going, haven't they? Their judicial system is quite good, the Kanakas as well.
In what way?
Well, they use... they use psychology to find out the culprit. Some bloke had done something wrong in the village. They got the whole village together, and the bloke stands in the centre, and he's got this twine, he's twisting it all the time with a bone on the end. And he's reading out the right act to everybody round in the circle, and suddenly they start easing away, shuffling. And there's one bloke left to himself, because they let the bone go, and it's twisting backwards and forwards, you see. But when the bone stops, somehow or other, it points straight at this bloke that's all sitting in by himself, and he gets up and runs away. And when he gets up and starts running away, these drums start going. And they keep going, day and night. And then the drums stop. And the blokes go out into the jungle. And they bring this bloke back dead without a mark on him.
Did you see this happen?
Yeah, yeah. This really happens. But don't ask me to explain it. I can't explain it. They just bring this bloke back.
Were these Kanakas used for labour on the site where you were working?
No.
By the Japanese?
No. No Kanakas was used for labour. They didn't use them for labour at all. Why not? I don't know.
But could they come freely to the site where you and the Japanese were?
No, only if they were invited. The dancers, the Kanaka dancers came round one night. That's all I can understand. These two old women that danced in unison to entertain the Japs. They came there, and the Japs had sake and all the rest of it, because I had some sort of celebration, and they danced for the Japanese, but that was the only time I ever saw a Kanaka in the camp itself. They had to keep well out of the way.
Did the Kanaka speak pidgin English?
Oh, yes, this one fella. He told me fightin' black fella, me fightin' white fella, let me sort of do it again. Me fighting big box. Me punching black fella, me punching white fella. Him big box, plenty, plenty cry. Well, that means I play the piano. Me fighting big box. Me punching black fella, me punching white fella. Him big box, plenty, plenty cry. Have you got that? That's an idea of it. They go, everything is fella, you see. Well, they can't say fella, so it's Pella.
It becomes Pella.
Yes, the F's become P. Hmm.